So we're reading this evening from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text number 10, which very miraculously comes after text number 9. Let's do it together. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chakva deham punar janma naiti mameti sarjuna. You know the verse? Do you know the meaning? Krishna is saying that his janma, you know the meaning of janma? Birth. We honor Krishna janma ashtami. He appears on the eighth day of the moon. Janma ashtami, janma ashtami. Janma means birth. Karma, you know. Karma. Activity, work. Krishna's appearance, janma, and his karma, or his lila, his activity, are divyam. Divyam, like the English word divine, transcendental. Janma, karma, cha, cha means and, conjunction, made divyam, divyam. Krishna's appearance and his activities are divyam. And one who knows that, evam yoveti tatvataha, tatvataha means in truth, veti means to know, evam yoveti tatvataha, chaktva deham, one when giving up this body, deha means body. When you give up this body, punar janma na. Again, a birth? No. No more birth. No more birth. And no more having to sit there and be nice and, you know, no more problems of life. So, the message of chapter 4, text number 9, Krishna is describing the benefit of transcendental knowledge, or at least the preliminary benefit of transcendental knowledge, and that is liberation. Text number 10 flows from text number 9, which is beyond liberation, attaining love for Krishna, which is a very basic understanding of our Krishna consciousness movement. I'll say it again. Love for Krishna is beyond liberation. Love for Krishna is beyond liberation. Or you attain love for Krishna, you don't have to worry about liberation. It's a subset, for those of you that like mathematics. It's a subset. It's already included. Like, if you have $1,000,000, you have $100. You have $10. You have $1,000. You have $1,000,000. It's a subset. It's already included. So 9 is about liberation and 10 is about attaining love for Krishna. And what we need to attain love for Krishna beyond liberation. There's two things that are mentioned in text number 10. And that is, the first one that's mentioned specifically is going beyond the coverings. In chapter 3, close the door. In chapter 3, raga, bhaya, and krodha are mentioned. They're mentioned as coverings of the soul. In chapter 2, the body, sharira, the body is a covering of the soul. That's a gross covering. Then there's subtle coverings. raga, baya, and krodha. So it's the mind is another covering of the soul. And it's a contaminated condition. And here in chapter 4, this text 10, Krishna is describing going beyond those coverings of the soul to the point of not just the soul beyond the body, but more specifically the soul's relationship with the Supreme. Let's close the door. It's not only Western people that don't close the door. Prabhupada faulted that. When you enter the room, close the door. And he would say it so many times. And after some time, he would say it so strongly, you wouldn't forget to close the door. You know, breeze is nice, but there's noise outside. Let's see if the next gentleman closes the door. Someone can sit by the door and close the door. Let's do that. Very nice. Okay. So, who knows the Sanskrit for text 10? Starts Vita. Vita Ragabhaya Krodha. Anyone know the Sanskrit? Yes. No, wait, behind you. Very nice. Mamupashritaha. Bhavo. The nicest part of the last line. Bhuta mad bhavam agata. One attains my abode. One attains love for me. Anyone else know the verse? Okay. Let's chant it a few times together. Listen, we will chant responsively. Or chant it together. Vitaraga bhaya krodha, manmaya mamupashita, bhavo jnana tapasa, bhuta madbhavam agataha. Vitaraga bhaya krodha, manmaya mamupashita. Bhavo jnana tapasa, bhuta madbhavam agata. Translation, being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me. And thus they all attained transcendental love for me. In chapter 4, Krishna begins directly speaking about himself. We have this sequence, confidential, more confidential, most confidential. So confidential knowledge is about the soul. More confidential, this recognizing there's a distinction, like we were discussing in the morning class about discrimination, or discerning the differences between stages of devotion for the Madhyama Adhikari. So discriminating between matter and spirit, that's chapter 2. And then in chapter 4 is the first place in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna begins speaking about himself. He's disclosing about himself because we can't know about Krishna unless he discloses it. We can't guess or figure it out. It's Krishna discloses. So about him. And then most confidential comes later. The relationship of love and service between the living entity and the Supreme. This is transcendental knowledge, and Krishna's disclosing not only things about himself, but what's the benefit of knowing those things about himself? Liberation? Beyond that is love for him. So, purport. As described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. One who's too absorbed in the material conception can't understand the spiritual conception. Right? Holding on, like attachment, like we were discussing earlier today. Attachment. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Because to be a person with all the qualifications that Krishna has, it's like off the charts. I can't imagine someone with all those qualifications. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge and eternally blissful. In the material concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance and completely miserable. So what kind of body is this? How can a person be? Therefore, people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, what is supreme? The gigantic material manifestation is supreme. That comes later in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna describes those persons, worship me in my form of the universe. Ekatvam pratak dvena vishvato. What is it? Ekatvena pratak dvena bahudo vishvato mukham. Bahuda vishvato mukham. Vishvata. So they worship the Supreme in his universal form. Because they can't imagine. So this is called pantheism. Look up the dictionary definition of pantheism. And it means seeing God in nature. And when one sees God in nature, then there is, at least from the Western philosopher's conception of things, then there's some imagination of deifying the wind and deifying the oceans and deifying the sun and imagining deities. But the Vedic conception is they're not imagined deities, they're deities. They're personalities in control of the sun and the moon and the wind and the light and everything. Just share this with you. It's off the subject. I'll come back in just a moment. During our GBC meeting, one of our GBC members from Italy, his name is Madhu Sevita Prabhu, very nice grahasta devotee, GBC member. He was sharing during prasadam time about how in Italy, in what is now the Vatican, you know, the capital of the of the Catholic Church is the Vatican. So where the Vatican was used to be ruins of an ancient temple. And the ruins of the ancient temple that is now the Vatican was demigod worship. Like, explicitly, the history of the Vatican tells this, you know, Ganesh, Varuna, Indra, very clearly demigod worship from Vedic times. And it, you know, it had gone into ruins. They had stopped that worship, and so they just, it was a nice place. So they just knocked down the ruins and made a Vatican. So demigod worship was prevalent in Greece. Demigod worship was prevalent in Italy. Demigod worship was prevalent in Russia. You know, the Vedic culture, there's, you know, whatever you call it, archaeological records of the same worship as was going on in India long, long, long ago, was present, had spread. It was throughout the world. So, but the way that the another point of history is that one of the issues that one of the issues that Socrates had was that there should be worship of, he was favoring monotheism and didn't like this idea of pantheism or polytheism or demigod worship, which was what was evidenced from the epics of Greek literature, the Iliad and the Odyssey, which speak of the names of the Greek gods. He didn't like that idea. They should just worship God. And he was treated pretty harshly because there was like, you're insulting our tradition. Anyway, just European history. Here in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada is describing that people that have their concept is rooted in the bodily notion, bodily idea of self, the best they can think of is seeing God within nature, pantheism, or the universal form. You take that verse from the later chapters of Bhagavad Gita, above that is the Viratrup, or Bahuda, Pataktvena, seeing the worship of various demigods, and then above that is Ekatvena. Ekatvena, Pataktvena, Bahuda, Vishvato, Mukham. In descending order, or ascending. From just a bodily conception of seeing God as within nature, seeing their controlling personalities of nature, seeing God as one, Ekatvena. Impersonalism. So, for such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Now, how personal is the universal form? You can't love the universal form. It's impersonal. And so impersonalists like the universal form, because they don't have to worry about loving him. So this one of the requirements mentioned in this verse to go beyond, because also from the previous verse, carry over from the previous verse, going beyond the bodily conception of self to a higher conception. Because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. Oh no! So many problems I've had in life due to having this body And now you're telling me, in liberation, I'm going to have a body? No. Let's not have bodies. Just no problems, please. Just shanti. Nice, big, tall order of shanti, but no bodies. No personal forms. So, we've gone through so far raga, now vita raga, bhaya, fear of personal identity, attachment to the bodily conception of life and sense gratification that goes with it, fear of personal dealings in the liberated stage, because I have problems with personal dealings. I don't want personal dealings. No personal dealings. And when they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging with the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to bubbles in the ocean. So many bubbles out there. Look at that bubble, look at that bubble. There's a nice bubble. You're a nice bubble. Which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. This is a kind of fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all. Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophy and speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude there's no supreme cause. And then everything is ultimately void. You know any people like that? I know some people like that. In universities, it's very popular to become like this. So many philosophies, so many ideas. Especially, you know, reading Western philosophers, Nietzsche and all those guys. Frustration. The frustrated intellectual, there is no God. So they come up with existentialism. That's very high. I exist. What's the meaning to life? There is no meaning. Just I exist. Wow, that's really high, isn't it? Wow, they're up there. Why do I exist? There's no reason to exist. There's no reason to not exist. All I just exist. There's no rules. There's no consequences. Whatever it is, I just exist. There's no meaning. Life has no meaning. We just exist. And because that's so frustrating, they want to go out of existence and merge with the void. A born of Prabhupada says, impersonalism and voidism are born out of frustration. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially... So now he's going down the list again. Vita, raga, bhaya, and krodha. So this first comes raga. Too materially attached. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Bhaya. Some of them want to merge into the supreme cause, in Krodha. Some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation, out of hopelessness. This last class of men take shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as a spiritual vision. Wow. So that's philosophy, and then there's art and music that comes out of that frustration, anger, hallucination, worship. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world. One more time. Negligence of spiritual life. Fear of a spiritual personal identity. And the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, what to do? Well, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by a bona fide spiritual master, and following the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. And from that vaidhi sadhana bhakti comes bhava bhakti. And from bhava bhakti comes prema bhakti. And the last part is covering the stages of devotion. 9. From preliminary faith to love of God. Adaushradhatataksadhusanga, etc. From Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In prema, so he goes through the Sanskrit, gives the translation. In the prema stage, there's constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So, by the slow process of devotional service, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, one can attain the highest stage, being freed from, here's the list of three things again, all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustrations that result in void philosophy. Then one can ultimately attain the abode of the Supreme Lord. Attaining the abode of the Supreme Lord is, that's connecting this verse with text 9, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chaktva deham purnar janma naiti mam iti sarjana. So when going, when one gets to the liberated stage, but one can be situated in love for Krishna, and that means in this present lifetime, and being situated in love for Krishna in this present lifetime means being with Krishna. That means being in the spiritual abode of the Lord. Even though this body may be in this realm, the soul can be with Krishna in Krishna Loka. One's heart can be in Vrindavan with Krishna. The coverings of the soul are...
Summary.
The coverings of the soul are removed by the process of hearing the science of Krishna. Science of Krishna means the whole package. It's what the process of devotional service is, the Lord, his devotee, how the devotee serves him, the wonderful qualities of his devotees, the like we were hearing earlier today, the love of Mother Jasoda for Krishna, the love of Krishna for Mother Jasoda, the nature of those loving exchanges. How does it work? You can't bind Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a yet another rendering of that lila. It's very technical, but beautiful at the same time. When Mother Jasoda wants to bind Krishna, she can't, because Krishna expands two of his potencies. His, forget the Sanskrit terms, something his Swarup Shakti, his independent personal potency. And his a deluding potency. So Mother Jasoda, Krishna's potencies are stronger. However we may try, Krishna's potencies are stronger. If Krishna doesn't permit, it's not going to happen. But Krishna became moved by Mother Jasoda's love. So he withdrew those potencies. And he allowed, forget the two terms, he expanded two other potencies that allowed Mother Jasoda to bind him. Everything happens by the agency of Krishna's potencies, and Krishna moves his potencies in reciprocation with the love of his devotees. And that's where the next verse goes. The next verse is, Yeyatam mam prapadyante. According to how persons prapadyante, how they surrender unto Krishna, then Krishna exhibits different potencies. So if as devotees, if we remain consistently in this position of loving Krishna, pita madbhavam agata, simply at least striving, we may not be there, striving to always love Krishna, always try to please Krishna. It's a whole other set of rules. It's the internal potency of Krishna rules. It's that which brings us closer to Krishna rules. Even if it's an obstacle that we're dealing with, it's an obstacle that will bring us closer to Krishna. So we can embrace the obstacle because it's going to bring us closer to Krishna. But that requires knowing the science of Krishna. We know the science of Krishna. Everything is in our favor. And so naturally, this Krishna is wanting to disclose the science about himself, and the spiritual master wants to train the disciple in the science of Krishna. Because then all our obstacles to reach Krishna are removed. Isn't that nice? And these, so we'll, one more time, we've identified these three obstacles. Too much attachment to the bodily conception of life and all that goes with it. The expectations for happiness by bringing the senses to some sense object and finding happiness. It's not going to happen. But the attachment to it happening is an obstacle. It's a covering of the soul. It's a subtle covering, but that subtle covering results in gross coverings. Raga and bhaya, fear. Fear of personal identity. In the liberated position, we have spiritual form and spiritual activities and spiritual relationships. Since we don't know what a spiritual relationship is, we're afraid of relationships. So we conceal ourselves or pull ourselves in a shell. No relationships. Out of fear. One has to overcome that fear through the science of Krishna. And krodha, anger, frustration. So many philosophies, so many different ideas. Forget it. Frustration. So one has to go beyond frustration. It may be so many ideas floating around. That doesn't mean there's no idea. There's no genuine path to reach God. So then Prabhupada details that genuine path by simple. One has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. Hare Krishna. I thought I would stop a little earlier than I did the last time and allow discussion. If there's some carryover questions from this afternoon, I'll be glad to entertain those, or whatever you'd like. We can spend some question and answer time. Yes.
From the morning class.
Okay.
Do
we have a microphone? Go ahead. I'll repeat the question. There's a possibility the soul can rectify himself and go back home, back to Godhead. Why say Nitya Bada if that soul can go back to Godhead? You understand the question? Is it not inappropriate to say Nitya Bada if the soul that's in nascent activities can go back to Godhead? Then he's not Nitya Bada. He's temporarily Bada. Anitya Bada. Two answers that are kind of the same thing. Prabhupada's answer to that is, we say Nitya Bada until he is liberated, then he's Nitya Siddha, or Sadhana Siddha, or Kripa Siddha. It's to distinguish from the souls that are eternally liberated. And you can go in the other direction also, of time. You know, go that direction, but go that direction. It's not... I don't know if I want to go there. You know, the fall of the living entity. Anyway, living entities are eternally part of Krishna. So this situation of being covered is maya. It's that which is not, it's illusion. So Prabhupada said, when the living entity becomes awake to the original Krishna consciousness, it is as if but a flash of time has passed and now they're again reinstated in their original position. So therefore, let's not say Nitya Bada, if it's just, and it's, but if they may stay in that position endlessly, there's no guarantee. That's a question people ask sometimes. Will all the living entities eventually go back to Godhead? Or is it possible for a living entity to be forever in the material condition of life? And the answer is, there's no guarantee. And certainly one can be forever in the material condition of life. Even it's illusion. And some evidence of that is Krishna says in the Divine and Demoniac chapter, I forever cast them into the womb of demoniac species. So, it's to indicate that condition can go on eternally, but there is this mercy factor, and Krishna can release the living entity from that bondage. So that's what the term Nitya Bada means. Anything else? You all had so many questions this afternoon. Or midday. Yes. Can you shout a little bit? Project your voice a little bit?
You said that that was wrong bank, not story.
Yeah, you like that one? I can tell you another one. The Scholar and the Boatman, you know that one? Okay. Similar. Yeah, it's illusion. The fruits of my labor are accumulating. I did it, and I'm, you know, preserving the fruits of my labor by putting them somewhere.
I was asking, what does a devotee think as a right bank?
What is a devotee with right bank account?
Yes.
The right bank, the wrong bank account is to say we should not invest our valuable human form of life simply in the temporary body. The right bank account is we endeavor. We're not lazy people. We're very active people. But the purpose, the target, is Krishna, the realm of the eternal, the realm of the eternal soul. That's the right bank account. We can still, same activity. Like the example of Bhagavad Gita, two persons side by side are doing the same thing. To make it really clear, the same thing. They're in a factory. They're doing the same thing. One can be in material consciousness, wrong bank account. The other can be in transcendental consciousness, right bank account. The activity need not change. The consciousness needs to change. That's the right bank account. Okay? When we submit ourselves to a person, we have to accept whatever he says. But is there any need to check whether this person is genuine or not time to time? Well, the genuine, yes, but I would restate this. Whose question? It's not... before you submit yourself to someone, you should find out if they're genuine. And once they're genuine, then it's not from time to time, check it out and see if they're genuine. Before you submit yourself to that person. Prabhupada's statement or description of this in different language was, before initiation, one should, it's the duty. In fact, there's laws in ISKCON that say this, but it's description from our spiritual master. It's in Nectar of Instruction. The spiritual master should test the disciple, and the disciple should examine the spiritual master. It's the responsibility before submitting oneself. Is the student qualified? Is the teacher qualified? Like, you know, the topic from the midday. For transcendental knowledge to be transmitted, what are the qualifications that one should bring to that task of speaking and receiving transcendental knowledge? There's a book which one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples put together, published by the BBT, called Spiritual Master and Disciple. It's a compendium. It's extracts of things that Prabhupada said on that subject. So something that I have commonly done, not always done, but commonly done, is when someone wants to become, you know, they want to surrender, you're saying, you know, accept a person, surrender to the person, submit themselves to a person. I want to know that the person isn't just sentimentally saying that, but they understand what it means. So I asked them to read that book and go through, make four columns. One is, what are the duties of a disciple and the qualifications of a disciple? What are the duties of a spiritual master and the qualifications of a spiritual master? Make lists. And when those lists are complete, even if it's, you know, slightly different, you have a comprehensive list. It demystifies the whole thing of what submitting oneself to somebody means. You know, what am I supposed to do? What are they supposed to do? It can be all kinds of subjective, imagined, speculative ideas. Take away the speculation, put it in terms of what our founder Acharya has said, then you know. At least you have the right criterion to evaluate. And then you evaluate. Don't blindly surrender. Know what the criterion, and then examine. You two keep moving your heads, so here, let's sit over this way. No, there we go. Okay. Just so there's eye contact. So, I was sitting in a class once when Srila Prabhupada was speaking. He was speaking about the necessity of accepting a bona fide spiritual master. And there was one young man in the audience who wasn't very cultured, and right in the middle of class he interrupted Prabhupada. Said, Swamiji, how do we know who is a bona fide spiritual master to surrender to? Prabhupada stopped the class and answered the question. And his answer was, when you go to the marketplace to buy a diamond, you should have a preliminary understanding of what a diamond is. Because if you go to the marketplace to buy a diamond, the merchants may recognize you don't know what a diamond is, and they'll sell you glass or plastic. So you should have preliminary knowledge. What's the qualification that someone should have before I submit to them? Yes? So the initial kinds of inquisitiveness, Brahma Jigyasa, is general. I would like to know. Just like, you know, any of you who first came here to attend this class. I'd like to know. Or a similar type of situation where you're examining. You're not coming, say, I submit, whatever you say, I accept. But generally, it's not a fault, it's just by default, we won't know how to evaluate what's genuine, what's not. Often what people do is, whatever their knowledge filter is, if it matches their knowledge filter, then they like it. What's that? Just, you know, I accept it because it's like what I think. But how can, if everything was like what I think, then I don't need teachings. So, going back to what I was saying earlier, there has to be some willingness on our part to explore a different way of looking at things, explore new ideas, new understandings, but on the basis of that which is genuine. So then how do we determine what's genuine? It's coming into cyclic succession, etc. That's the criterion of a qualified speaker. They have control of the senses. They have control of their mind. They're gentle in their behavior and so on. And consistently so. So there should be some criterion. We examine according to that criterion and then we submit. And it can be a, you know, gradual thing. It's not like an off on, a rocker arm switch. It's more in degrees. Okay? Yeah. Oh, the answer is yes. The question is, can we change karma by Krishna consciousness? Whose question? Okay. We can change karma and we can transcend karma. Here's one nice statement that Prabhupada made. Srila Prabhupada, is it okay if we go visit astrologers or palmists? And Prabhupada's answer was, there's no necessity. He said, the palmist can tell you according to the lines of your hand such and such. And then you go to kirtan, and you clap in the kirtan, and then show your hand to the palmist, and the lines have changed. Meaning, though the material influences upon you are rearranged just by Krishna consciousness. And even if the material influences aren't specifically changed, but if one's consciousness becomes above those karmic forces, then it's like the lotus that's growing above the surface of the water. Even if the surface of the water is disturbed, the lotus remains untouched. And another answer is that when one engages in devotional service to Krishna, the material laws, the laws of action, reaction, karma, are replaced with the internal potency. The external potency is no longer ruling, the internal potency is ruling. So in those situations where the internal potency is ruling, if by karma, it was my karma to break my leg, then I may just get a smash on my foot, like I just happened upstairs. And so by karma, I was deserving far worse. I just got a token reminder of, you know, my what's in that direction, my past, something very bad. And so just a token reminder. So karma changes, yes. Anything else? Yes. Can you speak a little louder, please? To become humble, one should be honest. What is actual honesty? That's your question? Well, actual honesty is with a capital A, absolute, capital T, truth. That's actual honesty. Satyam is a Brahminical quality. Satyam is speaking the truth. You know, so I can be an illusion and speak according to my illusory conception what is the truth. But that's not real honesty. That's real delusion. So real honesty is seeing things as Krishna sees things. That's real honesty. And that's not possible unless one is freed coverings of material existence. What I'm saying here is it's a distinction between the mode of goodness kind of honesty and transcendental kind of honesty. Real honesty is real humility. Is in a spiritual conception. You can't have real humility that's not in a spiritual conception. You can have the resemblance of real humility, which will always have a breaking point. You know, somebody press somebody's button at a certain point, they lose their humility. Because it's not real humility. But humility on the spiritual platform isn't affected. It's not created by material circumstance, it's not checked by material circumstance. It doesn't come out of material circumstance. It comes out of a spiritual conception of who we really are. Like this question about humility this afternoon. Morning or whatever it was. Morning. Spiritual conception, then you have real honesty and you have real humility. In the morning I said that Yashoda's love is ultimate. How can I understand the gopis' love and Mother Jasoda's love? How can I be absorbed in that mood? So the distinction between Mother Jasoda's love and the gopis' love is the distinction between Vatsalya and Madhurya. It's a different type of pure love. So Mother Jasoda's love is pure without material taint. The gopis' love is pure without material taint. And it's a different type, the parental affection and conjugal affection. And in the distinction between parental and conjugal affection, the added component is, it's a little risky to speak like this in a world, one should not think of this in a worldly sense, that the love of the gopis is with complete selflessness. It's not to say that, oh, in Mother Jasoda's love there's some selfishness, but the degree of selflessness in the love of the gopis is more intense. And how to be absorbed in this? I'll just read Prabhupada's words. We just read them. How to come to the stage of prema bhakti. One has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by a bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead. So how to is you follow the regulations of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, gradually become purified through the stages of bhakti, coming to the stage of bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. That's how we do it. You just follow the path. It's not like the proverbial rainbow. You just keep looking for the end of the rainbow and it's always beyond you. Because a rainbow is just a reflection through the prism of water. But the love of Godhead is a real place, attainable. What is the purpose of initiation? Is it compulsory to go back to Godhead? Is there any possibility to go back to Godhead without initiation? The answer is, if you're on the level of Sukadeva Goswami, yes. And if you're not, no. There's one of the longest purports in the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita is on this, on the vein of this question, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing the glories of the holy name, and he's describing that just as Krishna is fully independent, the holy name of Krishna is as independent as Krishna is. The chanting of the holy name is not dependent on anything else, including the purascharya vidhis. There's nothing you need to do before performing the chanting of the holy name. As with the rituals of karma kanda, there's so many things one has to do before the ritual actually takes place to have it effective. But for the effective chanting the holy name, it's independent. Even independent of initiation. So that looks like, you know, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Oh, I don't need initiation, Haribol. So Prabhupada gives a 12-page purport where he says you do need initiation. And he's quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary on that verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it's not to minimize the holy name of the Lord is independent. But because of our condition, we can't access the fullness of the holy name except through mercy. So submission to the disciplic succession, which is the first part of the question, what is the meaning of initiation? It's submission unto the disciplic succession and acceptance by the disciplic succession. Both. Then the chanting of the holy name, the fullness of the chanting of the holy name is accessible to us. Now, for Shukadeva Goswami, he never went initiation. You don't find any description of Shukadeva Goswami undergoing initiation. In fact, it explicitly says he didn't. But what was the qualification of Shukadeva Goswami? He was liberated before he was even born. He didn't require that sangskar, diksha, sangskar. We require it. We're not already liberated. We're not already beyond material attraction and the influence of the modes of nature and our past karma. By submission through initiation, past karma is relieved. At least the doorway of becoming completely situated in transcendence is open by the mercy of the disciplic succession, by our submission unto and the acceptance by. That's what initiation signifies. And, you know, another answer to this question is, if someone gave you the opportunity to, in the spiritual world, not have anybody else there but you and Krishna. First of all, that's not going to happen. But were that to be an option, or the option of being in the presence of Krishna with unlimited numbers of loving devotees and the platform of pure prema bhakti, what's it going to be? The second one. The first one doesn't exist. The second one is, okay, if that's the case, then what do we need to do now to get there? We need to submit ourselves to those loving devotees. It's just common sense. So that's what initiation signifies, submitting to them, and they accept us. Haribo. That's what initiation is. And it entitles one to that transcendental association. Anything else? Okay. We're questioned out. Okay, no, two more questions. Go ahead.
Many times I'm realizing that expectation leads to frustration.
Well, false expectation leads to frustration. There are some things that you can expect. You can expect Krishna's love. That doesn't lead to frustration. If expectation doesn't match reality, that leads to frustration. We're not impersonalists. We don't make everything zero. We just should have realistic expectations. Is that okay? There you go. By following personalities like Prithu, we can become like them. In scriptures, there are different personalities.
And the appreciation of that personalities, which we may like, may be the qualities of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra.
Okay.
Instead of the pure devotional service qualities. Means sometimes when we read, they'll be kingly or something. So now my question is, because we are conditioned, how to identify which quality we suit in this Varnashrama, and also how to identify the pure devotional qualities, what to develop,
Well, for two things. Two things. If you stick to reading Srimad Bhagavatam, don't worry about it. You'll end up in the right place. Because the personalities described there are pure devotees, and when they're not pure devotees, like, you know, Daksha and other types of personalities that could all, you know, Indras and other personalities, it becomes very clear, oh, I shouldn't follow that particular personality because it leads you to the path of pure devotion. Second part is, until we reach that stage of pure devotion, which quality is most appropriate for us is best to receive guidance from some of the reasons discussed earlier. That is, you know, we have our information filters up. And, you know, if we didn't have information filters up, we would be in pure consciousness and we wouldn't need teachings and teachers. If we were Shukadeva Goswami, we wouldn't need initiation. We wouldn't need teachings. We wouldn't need anything. We're not Shukadeva Goswamis. Far from it. And so we need guidance. And it's the teacher's duty to understand the nature. They're empowered by Krishna to understand the nature of the student and to guide the student. It's Krishna's system. If I go the path, I don't need a teacher. I'm an illusion, but I don't need a teacher. That's a fool's paradise. I'm an illusion and I need someone to help me get out of it. So the scriptures are there, but I can read the scripture and not understand it because I got my information filters up. I read what is already in my mind. And the rest I filter out. So I need this relationship with the teachers. And therefore, how many times have you read in Bhagavad Gita under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master? It's like, you know, Prabhupada's got a hammer and he keeps hammering it. So there's the answer to your question. We should seek guidance. It's not when we seek guidance, we'll go the other direction. We just, you know, turn our intelligence off and go to sleep. We should be, you know, examining, like this question of, you know, taking shelter of. So, here's a qualified teacher, but now, I want to clearly understand the teaching. So I ask questions. I want to clearly, because it has to be something that's in here and not something that's out there. I have to clearly understand it. And it's not that after I understand it, see you later, teacher. Chalo, off we go, down the road. I don't need you anymore. That's impersonal. It's an ongoing relationship. It grows, like our relationship with Krishna grows. Another comment, in general, is the great personalities have similar qualities, like, you know, core qualities like humility and pridelessness. Amanitvam adamvitvam. And those qualities will inspire us, whoever you pick out of the menu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates are all like that. And perhaps even more approachable, at least in time. And their quality is consistently so humble. It's just like humbling how humble they are. And how qualified they are, and yet so how humble they are. So it's, you know, back to this question about humility and honesty. It's on the spiritual platform. And our problem is we're not. But we take shelter of them, and it'll get us to the spiritual platform, and, you know, which of the varnas and ashrams thing, you know, that's secondary. This is primary. We get the primary in proper alignment. The secondary comes much more easily. That's our Daivi Varnashram system. Prabhupada didn't introduce the Varnashram system initially. He introduced chanting of the holy name and hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam initially. And taking prasadam too. And following that, now the practical, how you apply yourself in this varna or that ashram, came secondary. Purity comes first. And that which inspires you to become pure, that's where your attention should go. And there's many inspiring examples, so many. Yes. Here comes the microphone. Look at this. Just a little switch and you're okay.
Total devotional service is based upon loving relationships.
Yes.
But accepting love of others is also much burden in heart.
I've heard the first part, but not the second part. Accepting the love is...
Accepting love of others is also much burden in
the heart. Speak into the microphone, please.
Accepting the love of others is also much burden in the heart.
Accepting... Could you say it? Is present in the heart. Burden.
They are unconditionally loving.
What did you have for lunch? You having heartburn? It's lightening for the heart. It's leavening. It's light. It makes the heart light. If it's done in the proper way. Say it the other way around. Not having our hearts open for the love that's being extended to us by loving devotees is a burden for the heart. That's the burden for the heart. We have diametrically opposite views on this point. And I'm sitting in the big chair here. You want to argue the point? Or should we discuss the point I mean to say? What do you mean when you say it's a burden to the heart?
Once our others are loving me, others are loving me.
That's nice. Then what happens? Oh, it's a burden. Then you want to reciprocate. That's nice. It awakens the loving propensity from within your heart towards others. That's nice. That's not a burden. It's not like... you know, somebody makes a deposit, now you're obliged to pay them back. And that's a burden, because you have to pay somebody back. It's not, love isn't ruled by contractual arrangements.
That's my problem.
Huh?
That's my problem, Maharaj.
That's not the problem.
But that's not a problem.
Take the microphone away from this man. Because it's not contractual. Let's go through it again slowly. But give the microphone to somebody else so you don't just... Okay. In the nature of loving relationships is it's without cause or prompt or obligation. It's without condition. So we're speaking of genuine, someone is genuinely extending a loving gesture towards you. A genuine, you know, on the spiritual platform. from that person's side, there's not some expectation from you. Now you're indebted, you have to pay back. That's not it. That's not, were that the case, then it's business. That's not what love is. Love is not business. And business is not love. A loving relationship is without condition. So now supposing somebody like this description, Vita, Raga, Bhaya, they're afraid of a personal exchange because they've been hurt so many times by getting involved in personal relationships. They don't want personal relationship. And someone is extending this loving gesture to them consistently, without any consideration. Just consistently. I've had this... I'll make a very broad statement and say, largely in this world, my experience is, most people don't know what a loving relationship is because they've never experienced one. And when a loving relationship is extended to them, they don't know how to respond. It's not in their repertoire of receiving someone else's love. Speaking now spiritual. And it's hard for them to open their hearts. It's exactly on this evening's verse. Their hearts are closed. And even if it's made soft by consistent loving gesture, it doesn't open. It's hard. If somehow it can open, it's not that now you got to pay back, da 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 da. It's not like that. Not like that at all. If one does, that's nice. If one doesn't, that's nice. Because a loving gesture is not based upon some calculation. I do this for you, and I'm expecting something back in return. It's not entrepreneurial, a business contract. It's love. Loving relationship is something else. And therefore I say it's not like that. It's not a burden. It's not a debt. It's our natural life. And at whatever point in time, the person who is the recipient of some loving gesture from a loving personality, a transcendentalist loving personality, then that's nice. Krishna is forever extending himself to us. Bhaktisiddhanta's language is the transcendental autocrat is forever inviting the conditioned soul to rejoin him in a eternal loving serving mood. That's not a burden. Living entity just says no. But if the living entity says yes, even a little yes, then so much happiness comes into their life. But it's not a contract. Very nice. Okay, moving on. Okay, we've kind of covered how to develop deeper gratitude and relationship with the spiritual master in the mood of service. So it's by the standard. We need to be attentive, like, you know, lights on, hello. Be present in that relationship, just like chanting. When you're chanting, you could chant mechanically, or you can be present with Krishna in the form of his holy name. And so be present in that relationship and recognize that which is... I've been giving a seminar in the college campuses in America this fall semester. Our seasons are different in America. So the fall semester, the is September until I came to India. And the topic is pure relationships, the currency of exchange. People like that. Currency of exchange. Pure relationships. So I have to spend some time defining that. The currency is when you go to a marketplace and you want something, you have to offer something the other person is going to accept. So now it's money. But supposing it was before money, then it was, you'd offer something, barter. Here's some bag of grain for your, I need some wood, or I need some nails and a hammer, so here's some. So it's something that's valued by both parties, mutually valued by both parties. That the economic term is commodity exchange. So it's a currency. So the currency of exchange in relationships is emotion. So when you're extending this question of increasing the sense of gratitude, when you recognize what it is that you're receiving, it's not only, you're not just receiving information from a spiritual master, you're receiving a gesture of, you're receiving Krishna. Krishna is being delivered in the form of Krishna's message from Krishna to the spirit, through the spiritual master to you. When you recognize what it is that you're receiving, that currency of exchange becomes, wow. And it's with feeling, with emotion, that it's with affection that it's being received. When that touches the heart, then automatically there's gratitude. Recognize what it is that's the exchange in that relationship. Last question. This is kind of, we've already done something like this. I'll take this one as the last one. Wow, this is a long one. I read in Lilamrita where Srila Prabhupada says, God helps those who help themselves. And Krishna asks for complete submission. Does complete submission include helping oneself? Prabhupada was asked this very question. Who asked this one? Good question. Nice question. When you submit to Krishna, that's helping yourself. It's the best means of helping yourself. It's the real self-interest. And so they're not mutually exclusive. When Krishna, then the other way, when Krishna is asking to surrender unto him, it's not that Krishna is selfish, egotistical, you better surrender unto me or you're going to be in trouble. It's the constitutional and natural position for the living entity. He's inviting the living entity to come to the position of happiness. It's not for his ego satisfaction. It's for the well-being of the living entity. And it's the way the living entity can help themselves, is to surrender to Krishna. They're not mutually exclusive. They're the same message stated differently. We just don't know what is on our self-interest. What is helping ourself mean? Is that nice? Huh? Second part. Oh, okay. How can these two statements hold good at the same time? Then, here we go. Please explain these two statements can be applied in the story of Gajendra's liberation and insult of Draupadi in the court of Dhritarashtra. Okay. This is fun. So, Gajendra. He started off being this big elephant going to take bath in this lake, and he was the king of elephants and had so many queen elephants, and he was in trouble. But he was thinking self-interest. But he was trying to help himself. The real self-interest came as he was reciting these stotras that he happened to remember by the grace of Supersoul from his previous life. As he was reciting them with such feeling that he realized, I don't need to offer this prayer to the Supreme Lord to protect me. He's going to protect me. What I really should be praying for is, when you get me out of this situation, may I eternally be situated in your service in some way. May I always be engaged in your loving service. Spontaneously arose in the course of his reciting his prayer. That was his real self-interest. Draupadi, same thing. Her self-interest was, you know, to protect her shyness. Then she realized that that's not going to do it. Krishna, that's full surrender. Atma Nivedana. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda. Now that was her real self-interest, whether she was protected with her shyness or not. In both cases, Krishna took care of the material circumstance, but more importantly, the real self-interest. So it behooves us to... seeing behind you, there's a guard. He wants to come in for the class. How do you vote? It behooves us to go beyond the regulations, the vidhis of sadhana bhakti. You just do the do's and avoid the don'ts, and that's it. But to go to the spirit of those vidhis. The spirit of those vidhis is to assist us to come to the position of full surrender. So like chanting. We're all chanting. Probably all of us are chanting. But there's probably different qualities of our chanting. So when we're chanting, a nice exercise, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, there's stages in becoming more intensely absorbed in chanting. So there's chanting, and there's intensely absorbed in chanting. And he describes stages of intensely absorbed, how to go more deeply into the holy name, the chanting of the holy name. So I could give some of those messages that he offers, but we should want to experience that essence, and that's our real self-interest. And then Krishna helps us. But what he's asking for in 1866, surrender unto me. Sarva dharmam parityaja, mam ekam sharanam braja. That's the essence. So as we're doing the vidhis, as we're chanting the holy name and all the other regulations that we follow, aspire for, strive for, cultivate anukulyena Krishna anushilana, following the example of perfected souls, like this other example we heard here of perfected souls and hearing about them and aspiring to become like them. Just by hearing about them, it will happen. Enter into that essence. That's our real self-interest. I'll give one of them. There's three of them that Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes. What's the meaning? The first one is, what's the meaning when you're chanting your mantra? What's the meaning of the mantra? So that can be particularly appropriate when chanting Gayatri mantras, because there's a meaning to them. But there's a meaning to the Maha Mantra. And the meaning of Maha Mantra, Prabhupada has given. It's, O energy of Krishna, Hara, please engage me in the service of your master, Krishna. So, the exercise that we did at the Japa retreat was, we had everybody chant in unison, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. So, while that was going on, I said, I'm going to speak something, and continue chanting softly. And this is the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's message was, Krishna, O Krishna, please accept me. Because it makes it real simple. It's the same message and the same mood, just real simple. Krishna, please accept me. So this Japa retreat was in early September. I just got a message from one of the devotees that attended this, somebody that's a postdoc researcher in America. And their chanting to this day is still moved by that. We were chanting 64 rounds, and the whole 64 rounds, they said they were sailing with that mood of just from their heart calling out to Krishna, please accept me. So normally their mind is very active in processing so many things, but that stopped. They were given reprieve because this call was so strong and they felt so connected with Krishna. It was so enlivening. It was like riding a wave, and the wave didn't end, it just kept going. Connecting with Krishna. But in the humble mood, in the genuinely humble mood of requesting, Krishna, please accept me. Now, from the other side, Krishna is forever inviting us. Please come to me. The problem is not on his side. He doesn't want to accept us. The problem is on our side. We're lazy and foolish and attached. So if we can open our heart and not just perform the vidhi, but call out what the meaning of the mantra is. Krishna, please accept me. Try it in your japa tomorrow morning. And you're sitting wherever you do your chanting. You know, right from the very beginning, when you first begin your chanting, it's nice. Fix your attention. Not just say the words in your mind, but call out from your heart. See what happens. It's a whole other thing. And that's helping yourself. Taking the constitutional position, I'm the servant, he's the master. I want your service. Please engage me. Please accept me. It's very powerful. Maha Mantra is Krishna. That's all powerful. And from our side, we have to be eager for that relationship with Krishna. It's not a mechanical process. It's not an artificial process. It's not like Krishna is a vending machine. Put in our coins, pull the lever, and down comes Krishna. It's a relationship. A loving relationship. And it's very nice. I think we'll end with that. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.